The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, episode 135. Welcome to the Business Couch with Dr. Yishai. I'm your host, Dr. Yishai Barkadari, psychologist and adaptability coach to entrepreneurs and business leaders. I believe that working on your business is more important than working in your business. If you want to achieve your business goals and dreams without the cost and pain of having to make every mistake yourself, then the Business Couch with Dr. Yishai is the podcast for you. I'm here to help you learn from the lessons of entrepreneurs and business leaders to help you work on yourself and your business so that you can save time, energy, and grow faster. For those of you new to the show, the Business Couch with Dr. Yishai presents 3 new episodes each week. On Insight Sunday, we dive into the minds of business leaders through insightful guest interviews. On Story Tuesday, we dig deeper with them and learn firsthand from their stories, hard-earned lessons, and experience. On Thrive Thursday, it's just you and me on the couch, where you'll hear scientific research, my thoughts, and tangible tactics to adapt and grow yourself and your business. Grab a proverbial seat and listen up so you can learn from the minds and mistakes of business leaders and apply their wisdom to your life and business. Welcome to Thrive Thursday with Dr. Yishai. This week on the Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, I had Ian Moyse, tech sales leader, industry cloud expert, and social influencer, and chief revenue officer of 1UP Sales. In episode 133, Ian shares his story of going from programming at IBM to becoming a sales leader and CRO at 1UP Sales. Along the way, he shares insights and factors that have helped him leverage marginal gains for his own, his team's, and his clients' success. In episode 134, Ian talks lessons on learning. He shares why he listens to and how he learns from his most junior salespeople and how it creates an environment for growth and success for himself, his teams, and 1UP Sales. He talks about mistakes, when he worries about not making mistakes, and how to leverage them to increase your performance, leadership, and sales. If you haven't yet, go back and listen to episodes 133 and 134 to learn from a leader, industry expert, and thought leader in the tech and sales sector. At the end of episode 134, Ian asked about the habits and processes that create gravitas, a way that we show up with earned respect, people placing great weight and emphasis on what we say and how we show up. So today, I'm digging into 4 habits that you can develop and work on to increase your gravitas. Before we dive in, I wanted to share that the Business Couch with Dr. Yishai is brought to you by Adaptability Coaching and Consulting. If you lead a 7+ figure business and want to reach the next level for yourself and your business, if you have passions, goals, and dreams and want to continue to strive as a team, a leader, and a visionary without risking burnout, if you have overcome challenges, developed wisdom, and know that adapting is not just for surviving, but a core part of thriving, then adaptability coaching is for you. With psychology and neuroscience-backed tools, the 3D adaptation framework can show you how to tap into and harness the way our brains are uniquely designed for adaptation. You can learn to harness and leverage adaptability tools and frameworks to grow yourself and your company. You can learn to become fast, flexible, and formidable. You can learn to hone yourself further to proactively adapt, to thrive, instead of reactively adapting, just to survive. To learn more, go to dryishai.com/coaching. And now, without further ado, let's dive into 4 habits to increase your gravitas. After a decade of blood, sweat, and tears, 7 years of grad school, a year of residency, and a year of working as a licensed psychologist, I decided I wanted to do consulting and coaching for entrepreneurs and business leaders. When I shared that vision with my family and friends, they were supportive, but they also had some skepticism and express their doubts. To quote an entrepreneur friend, with 7 companies that he's running and leading under his belt, it's clear that you're a really smart guy, but you need to answer this question on every entrepreneur and leader's mind. What can a psychologist do for me as an entrepreneur and leader? Shortly after that, I was talking to my brother, a VP at a finance firm at the time, and he echoed a similar sentiment. Fortunately, he was willing to hear me out and willing to take a gamble on sharing an issue that he was facing his company. But our conversation didn't really convince him. In fact, it wasn't until about a year later that he came around to taking me and my direction seriously. What changed in that time? Before I jump into the 4 habits that underpinned the transformation in how I was showing up and how my brother and other entrepreneurs and leaders experienced me, I want to talk about a few things that didn't change. First of all, my relationship with my brother didn't change. It's been the same relationship during that whole time. It's not like I was wooing him or buying him dinners or trying to get him to like me more. And my title, my label, the accomplishments that I've had under my belt, those things haven't substantially changed in the same amount of time. In addition to that, the underlying content, the principles, the frameworks, the ideas that I've been developing, those also haven't really changed. And finally, the clothes I wear, my posture, focusing on these externally visible details, that's also something that I didn't really put a lot of conscious effort into or change in a particular way. So what did really change and what made the difference? So there are 4 major things that changed, and I really want to talk about them and talk about habits that you can develop in these 4 areas. The first one is clarity. Clarity of understanding, clarity of thought, and even clarity in communicating. A lot of that starts with my own thought process. For example, being able to form and distinguish between nuances, being able to draw themes together by commonality from experiences and from understanding between research, lived experience, experience of my clients. This really forms the early steps to creating the frameworks and tools that I'm using all the time. Another piece of this is that it's been really important to continually seek and make sure that the thoughts and ideas that I'm working on, that I'm working with, and that contribute to the frameworks and tools are empirically founded, that they get applied in reality, that they're battle-tested, and that they're universally applicable ideas. Without a solid understanding and clear language to share it, ideas can be slippery and ephemeral. They can be really hard to grasp, like nailing Jell-O to a tree. And the people who try to share that as an expert are often viewed or recognized as novices. And don't get me wrong, there's a time to be in that process, and there's a time to be, to have, to share, and to embody the gravitas of being able to clearly understand and articulate, to communicate exactly the idea that you want to communicate. Okay, so how do you work on this as a habit? There are a couple of things you can do. One that I think is really important is to carve out and take time on a regular basis to play with and tweak your ideas, to use a lot of different kinds of language to try to express them, to make comparisons or draw analogies, and to engage in a process that's really just centered on trying to get a better understanding, and even maybe to practice saying that out loud and what that sounds like. You know how you can tell the difference between somebody who gets on stage and hasn't really ever thought about or communicated what they're trying to say versus somebody who's said it 1,000 times? It's really similar when it comes to your gravitas in terms of your clarity of understanding and thought and communication when it comes to your ideas. The second element was making sure that what is being communicated is really resonant, even memorable. When you have stories, real life relevant experiences to share, not some kind of far-fetched or tangentially related story to try to make a point, when the story is familiar already, And when it's shared in a way that has details, that has anticipation, that has all the emotions and processes, while not getting too bogged down in the details, when it starts off as relatable or familiar and then takes a new or different turn, and that turn really helps connect with that clarity we were just talking about, it helps to present that idea or underscore it, that kind of resonant communication is a really powerful way, and it can be simple and clear, and it can be a really powerful way to share and remember ideas, principles, and frameworks. Another way to do that is to also have 3 or 4 or 5 steps or phrases, maybe a mnemonic or an alliteration, something like the 3 D's, the 3 A's, the 3 P's. In other words, a short and systematized way of being able to remember, to connect, to relate, and to integrate your idea, your tool, your framework can be really powerful in making for memorable and resonant communication. It's also really helpful if it fits with a past experience, especially a pain point or a difficulty, and that there's some kind of applicability to help make a change for the future. A really resonant idea or resonant communication really pulls people into reflecting on their past experiences and decision points, being able to see an inflection and a space to do differently. And if it can add a clear application for the future, it will not just lodge itself in the person's past memory or past experiences, it will lodge itself in their present and help motivate them to remember and to think about and to continue to play with and ponder the idea that you are communicating. That's very resonant communication. Being able to tap into that motivation to draw in and pique their interest is so important and so powerful, because you can have incredibly useful and clear ideas, but how they are shared makes the difference between getting ignored versus getting it branded into somebody else's brain. So what can you do to help create this habit of resonant or memorable communication? One part of it is to practice storytelling. Another part of it is when you have an idea or a framework or a process, to really spend a lot of time. And I will tell you personally, one thing that I really like to do and I do very frequently is that when I'm creating a framework, I go to a thesaurus and I look up all these different synonyms. I look up all this different language. I look up definitions for language and I go down quite a rabbit hole. I take a lot of time and put a lot of energy into putting together these different frameworks, processes, systems to create resonant communication. So carve out the time and put intention into trying to put together a framework, a system, a process that is simple, that is short, that has 3 to 5 components, and maybe they spell something out, or maybe they alliterate, or maybe it's 3 of the same letter. And however you're doing that, just spending that time on that process is going to really help you continue to develop and build more resonant communication. One final piece about resonant communication is that it really taps into and evokes a lot of emotion. Emotions from people's past experiences, emotions they're experiencing in the present, and emotions they may want to experience in the future. So being able to and spending time and energy thinking about emotion, emotion language, and when that shows up or how it shows up and how you want to tap into that is another really important skill and something you can develop as more of a habit as you are working on and developing more gravitas in sharing your ideas. Third, it's really important that you and your ideas are adaptive. Adaptive ideas, principles, frameworks, tools, strategies, etc. All of them, they have an authenticity that comes from ringing with the truth. And more than that, it's really important that these ideas invite lots of different situations and adapt to lots of situations, meaning they're applicable, or that whatever your idea, your principle, your framework, your tool, your strategy is, that it's been developed out more than just the basics, more than one or two situations or scenarios in which it's really applicable. So that kind of brings us back a little bit to clarity of thought, thinking through, and also, in a way, battle testing. Again, that comes back to the clarity, battle testing, and knowing that it's applicable in more than one place. Because if it's not applicable except in an extremely narrow or very specific circumstance, or you haven't thought about other situations or exceptions or additional information or additional factors, then it's really easy for that to start to feel like it can crumble or fall apart. In other words, mastery isn't about being the best and just shutting everyone else down. Mastery is about having deeply ingrained understanding, expertise, and welcoming feedback, pushback, and criticism, because the idea, the principle, the framework, the tool, the strategy is adaptive because it can shift and change and it can apply itself in slightly different ways in many, many different circumstances. You know, one concept that comes to mind very related to that is anti-fragility, which comes from the book Anti-Fragile by Nicholas Taleb. Anti-fragility represents a system that is strong and flexible, open and adapting to challenges and criticism. Instead of a challenge, a criticism, or a blow to it causing damage that doesn't get healed, rather than not getting healed or being pulled apart or permanently damaged, instead that system actually creates greater strength as a result of each criticism or each blow to it. So when we talk about adaptive ideas, it's really important to recognize that rigidly held ideas, ideas that are either pushy or forceful, they can lose credibility. Ideas that break rather than bend, adapt, or develop stronger, they can lose credibility. And people who communicate in ways that are rigid, that are pushy or forceful, that break rather than bend, that don't invite that kind of opportunity to get tested in multiple scenarios, get pushed and prodded and stress tested, that adaptability factor for ideas, for frameworks, for processes, and for people who are communicating them is a really important part of developing and having gravitas. Fourth and finally, guiding. It's really important that ideas, frameworks, principles are accessible and applicable for novices and experts alike, leading from A to B to C in a clear, simple, easy to envision way. If an idea is only accessible to somebody who is an expert, then when they talk about it, many, many people are going to feel like they're being talked over or it's above their head. And while they may have some acknowledgement or recognition for that person being very smart or really capable, they are really going to struggle to see its applicability for themselves. And in fact, I think that's one of the things that I was hearing from my entrepreneur friend who said that the question I would need to answer is what a psychologist can do. How can they be helpful to an entrepreneur or leader and their business? Essentially, he was telling me that I sounded smart or that it seemed like I had a lot that could be useful, but it wasn't as accessible. There's a concept from a book by Chip and Dan Heath called Made to Stick, Why Some Ideas Survive and Others Die. And they call it the curse of knowledge, that for some people who become experts, they talk as if everybody they're speaking to is at their level, thinks and knows exactly the information that they do. And what it can do is it can create an exclusionary experience for people who don't yet have all of that information. And what that can do is also communicate that some people or ideas are better or worse than others, that some belong and some don't. Exclusionary can become even this tribal game of them versus us. We and our ideas are better than them and their ideas. And when you enter into this space of communicating in a really particular way or in a very jargon-like way, and it's not as accessible for novices, then the issue is that they feel like they don't belong. And it's really hard to be able to put that kind of gravitas or weight or respect on what you're saying because they don't even understand what it is. To give an example, Richard Feynman, who was a physicist who was so well known and had so much gravitas because the way he talked about physics made it so simple and accessible for novices and experts alike. People who are really into physics and are experts really like to hear the way he communicates because he puts such a complex idea in a simple way. And novices love to listen to him because in a short amount of time, in a really brief lecture, they could wrap their head around something that can feel as unknowable, as complex, and as pie in the sky as rocket science. And I was just alluding to something I think is really important because being able to also speak to the experts, speak in a way that the experts can gain something important for themselves, whether it's to level themselves up or to get a simple way of understanding something that in their brain is held in such a complex way. Being able to get something as an expert is equally important. Otherwise, what you end up having is a bunch of novices who look up to someone, and the experts may even look down to them or to the ideas they have or the way that they're sharing it. So how do you cultivate that habit? The habit of guiding is really about being able to take a step back and think, if somebody has very little or almost no experience or expertise, but they're fairly intelligent, could they really understand this? What might they need to know? What might they need to understand? And perhaps another habit that you can engage in is to share, especially with intelligent people who aren't in your area, who aren't experts, to share and see what it is that they may be able to understand or gain from it. That kind of feedback process will help you learn and know and understand if you are really guiding and if you're accessible and applicable for novices and experts alike. So, what happened a year after my first conversation with my brother? One day, we're chatting about family and work when he asked me about my podcast, and I started to tell him about my most recent episode, which happened to be episode 114, How to Curate and Cultivate High Performance. But this time, he was completely enthralled and blown away. Nothing short of impressed. After collecting his jaw off the floor, he said something I really didn't expect. It was a total shock to hear. He said, "I have to tell you, listening to you now is so different than a year ago. The way you talk, what you're saying, and how you talk about it has so much more weight and has such a ring of truth and authority. It's also so down to earth and simple to understand, but at the same time, so eye-opening. I have no doubt that you're going to succeed." In other words, my brother was hit square in the face with a gravitas that didn't exist just 12 months earlier. And now you have the habits that I worked on and consistently harnessed for incremental growth that made all the difference. Clarity, resonance, being adaptive, and guiding. One, clarity is about having a firm grasp on your idea and area of expertise. Two, resonance is being able to communicate in ways that resonate with past experience, with emotion, and open up new and better possibilities for the future. Three, being adaptive in the face of challenges or criticism. And four, making your ideas easy to access and apply across many levels of experience from novice to expert. People with gravitas consistently work at and improve these ways of approaching, thinking, and communicating their ideas and themselves. And that constant work is how they earn respect. Because when they choose to share an idea, it has a mixture of those four ingredients that makes it masterful. You don't have to have all four. In fact, some people with tremendous gravitas frequently have and display three or even two of them in action consistently when they are communicating, speaking, and sharing themselves and their ideas. So pick one and start working at it. And on that note, I'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us today on the Business Couch with Dr. Yishai. If you enjoyed today's episode, take a moment to rate and review the podcast. It helps grow the show and gives more people like you the ability to learn and grow. You can also click the share button to share today's episode directly with someone you know who would enjoy it. The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai podcast artwork is made by Sam Barkadari, show notes by Yishai Barkadari, and music by www.purple-planet.com. The advice and opinions of the host and guests are our own. I'm a psychologist, but not your psychologist. The conversations and content of this podcast do not contain or create any psychology practice, diagnosis, or therapist-patient relationship with either the guest or the listener. So do your own research before using anything from this podcast. Thank you for listening. Remember, our thoughts and reactions affect our actions. By listening, we can learn from the challenges others face and the choices they make, so that we can make better decisions and get better results.